Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hey there, welcome in. Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Steve continues his vacation. Sean Carey, we are here in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai, in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Lots of ways to get in contact with us. Our email, stevejones@wkok.com. On social media, like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle at stevejonespsu. And don't forget, live shows, after we finish them up, we post them as podcasts. And we drop them by 6 p.m. Eastern on iTunes, the Apple Podcast app, and Google Play. If you listen to us with your Apple device, don't hesitate to leave us a review. And also, we post our podcast, like we always do, at stevejonesshow.com. So we'll be with you till 5, then we'll have the late-day news roundup with Sarah Benick, and then tonight, Phillies baseball here on WKOK. Warm-up at 6:30 with Jim Jackson, first pitch at 7:05 with Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson. Phillies will have Aaron Nola on the mound tonight. He'll be facing off against Houston for the first time in his career. The Astros are looking for a three-game sweep. And through the first two games of the series in Philly, Houston has put up 22 hits and 18 runs after a 5-0 win last night. Nola 7-6 on the season with a 3.38 ERA. So we'll have that tonight for you here on WKOK at 6:30. Steve's going to be back with us on Tuesday following his vacation. We've got a Phillies day game next week on Monday here on WKOK. So for the next few days, and actually for the past few days and for a few more days, we will be replaying some of the great interviews we've had on the show over the past several months, including the always entertaining Rick Neuheisel from CBS Sports. We will replay his interview next hour. Also joining us will be Ed Henry from Fox News Channel. Ed wrote a terrific book on the late, great Jackie Robertson, and we had him on back in April. So we'll have those replays next hour. And also joining us will be Jerry Dulac, the golf writer and Pittsburgh Steelers beat writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Jerry will join us in the next half hour. And also we'll get in some Williamsport cross-cutters talk in just a few seconds with Mitch Rupert. Mitch joined us just a few weeks ago. Of course, the talk in Williamsport has been Adam Haseley, the overall number one draft pick by the Phillies. He spent now close to a month in Williamsport and doing very, very well. And actually, we did have Adam on the show a few weeks back. We'll be playing back that Adam Haseley interview tomorrow here on the Steve Jones Show. Also, the keeper of the cup, Philip Pritchard. He's the guy who tours all over the world with the Stanley Cup. Yep, he's the guy that, you know, when the players get their access to the Stanley Cup for 24 hours, yes, Philip is in a group of like one or two other guys where they're in charge of making sure that, you know, something terrible doesn't happen to the cup. So we'll hear from Philip again tomorrow, and we also have replays on Friday with ESPN's Tim Kirkchen, Tim Frazier, former Penn State basketball star, and John U. Bacon, the terrific author, who for close to 4 years was working on a project with the late, great ESPN talent John Saunders. John U. Bacon's book on John Saunders will be coming out in a couple of weeks, and we'll replay that conversation with Steve and John on Friday here on The Steve Jones Show. stevejones@wkok.com, our email address. Don't hesitate to get in contact with us. And, of course, throughout the day, we will have our usual segments, This Day in Sports History, Play-by-Play Call of the Day, and, of course, the show not complete without the Sports Bozo of the Day. This guy, complete opposite of Bozo, one of the great writers in Pittsburgh, not only golf, but the Pittsburgh Steelers as well, from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Jerry Dulac, he was with us close to a month ago.
A guy that falls into the definition of a true pro's pro, that is our old friend Jerry Dulac from Pittsburgh and the Post-Gazette. Jerry, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Well, Steve, thank you. You know, anything for a Penn State man, but I thought the segue was going to be a man who was humble. but you chose a pro's pro, and that's fine, too. Thank you.
I appreciate that very much. All right. I want to start with the Steelers, and I'll get to a little bit of golf, if that's okay. You've written some pretty good things in dealing with Carnell Lake about how the situation in the secondary is starting to take some shape. What were a couple of takeaways that you got from Carnell Lake that really may be eye-opening for Steeler fans?
Well, I think the first thing before we get to Carnell Lake is that I think people forget how improved the secondary was last year. It just gets clouded by what happened in New England at the end of the year. And so then the secondary was open for criticism. I think the other part of that is the lack of pressure. And so that, to me, that is a bigger culprit than the play in the secondary. So, but there's no question, I think the biggest objective in the offseason, and this is what they learned in New England, is that they have to be able to play man coverage better and more frequently than they do. And when they went to it in New England, people think they didn't, despite what announcers were saying, they did. And whenever they did, Tom Brady just picked them apart. And then it became, you know, pick your poison. How do you want to get picked apart, with man coverage or zone coverage? But every time they went to man, it just blew up in their face. So they just went and stuck with zone and tried to make it work, and it just didn't. So that's their objective in the offseason, to find players, to draft players who can play man coverage. That's what they did with both of the corners they took in the draft. If they were going to draft a safety, it would have been the same prerequisite, guys who can play man coverage. That's the biggest focus defensively during the offseason, that and improving pressure. You know, the Steelers believe that you can have Darrell Revis and Richard Sherman back there, but if you can't get pressure on the quarterback, the elite quarterbacks are going to pick you apart. It doesn't matter who's back there if you don't get pressure. And they just don't apply consistent pressure. Well, they have a nice amount of sacks, but they don't have that guy or guys off the edge who are going to strike fear in the other team's tackle and or quarterback. And I think that, to me, is the biggest missing piece in that defense. Now, that's why they drafted T.J. Watt, and they're certainly hoping that maybe not immediately, you know, maybe there's a little grooming period here, but eventually, maybe by midseason, late in the season, he can be that guy, and then heading into 2018, who can be that disruptive player off the edge.
What did you think of Burns and Davis in their respective development in the secondary as you watched them last year?
Well, I think what you can see, one, you could tell Sean Davis is a football player. And the thing that you saw with Artie Burns is he has a very good skill set. So you had two young kids who, they didn't get their promotion by way of injuries to the starting lineup. They earned them by their play. And you saw them develop, and I think going forward, that's a big plus for that defense. That Carnell Lake unsolicited singled out Artie Burns, speaking of man coverage, for being excited about what they see from him so far, transitioning to, again, more man coverage. It's not going to be predominant. They just want to use it more than they have so they can become diverse. And so I think they're excited about both those players heading into year two. And you could just see instinctively and everything else, Sean Davis is a football player. He's very good. And I think that's why, you know, they're kind of eager to head into this year, but they're still, you know, this is where they were hoping Senquez Golson would fit in. Now it's, you know, I think Cam Sutton can surprise people, their third round pick, and they're hoping he can be their nickelback, and then eventually, transition to, that other outside corner spot. So, but with those two players, those two guys from last year's draft, you got a nice head start on, taking a big step to improving that secondary.
Golson's never played it down. I found it interesting as to what they were saying about what role he could potentially play. That has to be frustrating when you spend a second rounder on and the guy doesn't play it down in 2 years.
Yeah, and I think you can read between the lines there, Steve. When they say he's going to have to make this roster on special teams, that's not exactly a positive sign for him. They're not exactly holding out a lot of hope that he can do it. But when you say something like that, it just doesn't bode well for him. Now, they'll see when they get to camp and when they get to, when they put the pads on, but I think, they're not dumb. They can see from OTAs the things that they're looking for, maybe the quickness, the change of pace, the ability to cut. He's coming off a Liz Frank injury, and so that's the other thing that's bothersome. Carnell Lake even said that they want him to work on his speed before training camp. Well, if he doesn't have it by now, Steve, I don't think in 6 weeks he's going to find it, and I just think he has an uphill battle ahead of him. And you're right, it is frustrating. It's a shame. The guy has very good cover skills, but I think it's a long shot for Sanquez Golson. But we'll see once they get to camp.
All right, you were mentioning about the pressure. I mean, there are certain games last year, Jerry, as you know, where the Steelers could get some sacks in bunches based on matchups and so forth, but it seemed like it wasn't there, as you point out, consistently. Are they seeing it in personnel? Are they seeing it in a change of scheme? Where are they seeing where they can get better, more consistent pressure?
I think it's with personnel, Steve. Last year and year before, one of the things they did under Keith Butler is they went to more of a one-gap scheme. Then they did that to take advantage of their young, aggressive, athletic guys up front, in particular Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt. And it's no surprise that those guys have been their sack leaders the last 2 years. And so now you have Cam Hayward, who missed 10 games last year, done for the season. He will be back. And now you have Bud Dupree, their number one pick from 2 years ago, who missed the first 10 games of the year on the PUP list with that groin injury. Sports hernia injury. He'll be back. So, of course, you keep your fingers crossed that they'll stay healthy, but just having those two guys, Cam Hayward, their best defensive lineman and best pass rusher, now you pair him with Stephon Tuitt, who's a stud, and if Bud Dupree, that they were hoping to see that improvement from year one to year two, well, I don't want to say year two was a washout, because he was able to come back and play and get some time and contribute, and you saw it in the postseason. So they're eager to see where Bud Dupree is now, heading into, what has basically been a year and a half now, heading into year two to three. So I think it's more a personnel thing, that they feel that they have the people now. Throw in TJ Watt, and and they'll see what they have. And the other thing too, this young nose tackle, you're talking about Artie Burns and Sean Davis. Javon Hargrave, their third round pick last year, by the end of the year, this is a squat guy, Steve, who has a very quick first step and can be disruptive and be a bit of a pass rusher in the middle. So I think from a personnel standpoint, they believe that they have the people. They don't have a Von Miller. We'll see what happens with TJ Watt. I'm not saying he's going to be Von Miller. But they feel they have people up front with their front three guys and Bud Dupree and TJ Watt going forward that can be guys who, somewhat consistently get pressure on the pocket and disrupt the passing game.
How do you see the Le'Veon Bell situation playing out?
Well, the ideal thing would be obviously for them to sign him to a long-term contract. One, right, because you have him under contract, and two, it'll actually be less of a salary cap hit for him this year than it would be with the franchise tag. It's hard for me to predict because I don't know where Le'Veon Bell's mind is, and by that I mean I'm not sure what he wants to do. And of course, you can interpret that the other way too. Ideally, they would like to sign sign him. One thing, you know, when people ask one of the things the Steelers do, Steve, is they make sure that they retain their core guys. They make sure they keep the guys who are the best at their position on the team. Now you're talking about a guy just like Antonio Brown, who is probably the best at his position in the NFL. They're not going to let him walk away. And so, the question then would become, how much money does Le'Veon Bell want, and how committed is he to, respecting the Steelers enough to, want to sign with them, take their money, as opposed to seeing if he can get, however many more million per year from another team. But the Steelers can always franchise him again. They don't want him to walk away. They're not going to let him walk away. So, a lot of it's going to be up to Bell. But from a Steelers standpoint, they don't want him to leave. They want to keep him. The other thing I will say about the franchise tag, though, Steve, is that, Le'Veon Bell has two suspensions on his resume. And so even though the second one was because he was unaccountable, that isn't going to matter next time if he's unaccountable again. He's going to get a longer suspension. So you can't, now this maybe gives you a little bit of time under the franchise tag to see if he is going to be responsible and accountable and make sure he takes, these random drug tests because of that incident, where he got caught with marijuana in the car with LeGarrette Blount. And that was the downside from his standpoint, to that whole incident, is now he was going to be tested frequently. And you saw what happened. He missed one, and he got suspended.
Jerry, I have to just take a quick turn to golf here because it's a favorite topic of both yours and mine. They've gone non-traditional Chambers Bay, traditional of all traditional in Oakmont, and then non-traditional in Erin Hills. How do you think the non-traditionals have worked out versus the traditional?
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the non-traditional, Steve. The good news to me is that they go to a Shinnecock and Wingfoot two of the next 3 years, and the other one is Pebble Beach, even though that's a public slash resort style course, but it has a lot of history. I'm not a big fan, and I discovered this in 2002 when I went to Bethpage Black for that U.S. Open, and while the golf course is good and it's hard, to me, the concept was, you want to take the U.S. Open to the, quote, public, to the people, and the atmosphere there, it's in a state park, Bethpage Black, so when you drive in and when you're around the property before you get to the golf course, I always like to say, Steve, it's like you're at a pig roast. I mean, it's a different atmosphere. There's no charm, there's no history, there's no nostalgia, and to me, that, of course, is the beauty of the Masters. That is the charm and the mystique and the historical significance of the British Open. It's going back to the places where history was created. So to me, if it were up to me, if I were king, or president of the USGA and had the clout, I would develop a five-course rotation like the British Open. I know they use seven, but to me, it would be Oakmont, Marion, Olympic Club, Wingfoot, and Shinnecock. Now, you can throw in maybe Pebble, maybe Pinehurst, something else if somebody wants to debate the point, Oak Hill. But to me, because of the history with those five golf courses, that's what I like. That's what I prefer for U.S. Open. As golf courses, I'd love to play Chambers Bay. I haven't. I'd love to play Erin Hills. It looked fantastic on television. It was it just showed itself tremendously on TV. But, 16 under par, to me, that was a PGA championship golf course. That was better suited for a PGA, not a U.S. Open. A U.S. Open, to me, Steve, is about not making mistakes, where you try to minimize your mistakes. Well, at Erin Hills, if you made a mistake, you just thought, I'll go make birdie or even eagle in some instances, as we saw. And that's just not a U.S. Open to me. So that was my complaint about it. The golf course itself, I think, like I said, it just looks fantastic. fantastic. I just don't think it should be a U.S. Open venue.
See, I completely agree with that answer all the way through. I think this is golf's national championship. So what is the separator? Well, the separator is the fairways have to be narrower. The rough right. has to be a bit tougher. You have to be really precise on all how many you take, 280, 282 shots, whatever. You have to be precise on all of them. To me, that's what separates that tournament from other tournaments. That's just my opinion as someone who's either covered it or watched it.
Well, I agree with you, Steve. I think the other problem here going forward is we saw Aaron Hills play almost 7,700 yards. Now, it can be stretched to its max at 8,300 yards, but I'm telling you, it will not be too far down the road where we start seeing the 8,000-yard course. And the problem there is it doesn't matter how long the golf course is. At 7,700 yards, not one person in that field complained how long it was. You had five par fours over 500 yards. You had two par fives that were well over 600 yards. And length wasn't even an issue. Rocco Mediate said to me years ago, if you build a hole from here to Chicago, they'll find a way to birdie it. The longer you build it, the farther they'll hit it. And that's just what's going to happen. So, you take courses like, Marion and create some angles and you put the rough up. It doesn't have to be about length. It needs to be about shot making, and I just don't think this U.S. Open, and with all due respect to Brooks Koepka, who deserved everything he got, the Open is about trying to identify the best player, and in this case, it was I'm not saying that didn't happen, but the venue itself didn't lend itself to identifying the best player.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks so much, Jerry. It's great to hear from you again.
Steve, it's always good to chat with you, and anytime I enjoy chatting with you. I enjoy talking to you.
And we always enjoy having Jerry on the show. Jerry Dulac, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. We will also hear Jerry again on the Pittsburgh Steelers Radio Network over on 100.9 The Valley. These Steelers have to be checked in at La Trobe tomorrow, St. Vincent College, by 4 p.m. And their first practice Friday and first open practice available to the public is Saturday. All right, we'll have more baseball conversation coming up. Williamsport Post-Gazette Crosscutters beat writer Mitch Rupert in the next half hour following the news on WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK. Steve will be back on Tuesday enjoying vacation. I'm Sean Carey and enjoying time with you here in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors Ford Lincoln Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Just a few moments, we'll be talking Williamsport Crosscutters baseball with Mitch Rupert of the Williamsport Sun Gazette. But first off, we have this day in sports history. 1928, Gene Tunney beat Tom Heaney by TKO in the 11th round at Yankee Stadium to retain the world heavyweight title. 1948, Babe Ruth was seen by the public for the last time when he attended the New York City premiere of the motion picture The Babe Ruth Story. 1992, 25 years ago today, Miguel Indurain of Spain won his second straight Tour de France. 1996, American swimmer Amy Van Dyken won the 50-meter freestyle to become Atlanta's first quadruple gold medalist and the first U.S. woman to win four in a single Olympics. 1998, three spectators were killed and six were injured by flying debris from a one-car crash at the U.S. 500 at Michigan Speedway. They were the first fan deaths at a major race in the United States in more than a decade. And it was in 2004, the Arizona Diamondbacks, they ended their club record losing streak of 14 games. And that's a look at this day in sports history. There is some daytime baseball going on. And get those scores here in a sec for you. But I got to tell you about this story about Dontari Poe. Yes, losing weight can be a payoff. Falcons signed the defensive tackle earlier this year, but there was a weight clause in the contract. Poe weighed in at less than 330 pounds. They said, if you did that, we'll give you some cash. Well, he was able to pull it off, and he was able to nail a cool $125,000. Poe has been steadily losing weight since joining the Falcons back in the spring. He could make up to $500,000 off of weight bonuses on his one-year deal with the Falcons. And the reason why they brought in Dontari Poe, taking some attention off sack leader Vic Beasley. He led the NFL in sacks last year. Poe played five seasons with the Kansas City Chiefs, racking up 200 tackles, 13 sacks, and a touchdown pass that should always get mentioned when discussing Poe's stats. He is with Atlanta on a one-year, $8 million deal, with $7.5 million of that $8 guaranteed. Of course, the news out of the Kansas City Chiefs camp this week: Mount Carmel native Brett Veach is the new general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs. We have been in contact with the Chiefs, and we are hoping to have Brett join us on the show on a future show. We're hoping that's going to happen next week, so of course we will keep you posted on that. Then the story out of Kansas City yesterday was regarding former NFL quarterback Michael Vick. He is now a coach for the first time. Of course, Michael Vick one time played for Andy Reid in Philadelphia. Well, they have a reunion going on, Andy and Michael Vick. So Vick is going to be a coach's intern during Chiefs training camp. See how that shakes out for Michael Vick. Sticking with the NFL, what happens when you combine an incredible story of a hometown kid who played for the local college and ends up on the local NFL team? Well, you get the NFL's best-selling jersey. James Conner, third-round draft pick of the Pittsburgh Steelers, he currently has the number one-selling jersey in the National Football League. How cool is that? Not your usual bestseller, though. You know, he isn't some rookie setting the league on fire. And last year, of course, that was Dak Prescott. Zeke Elliott, both from Dallas, when they soared to the top of the charts. And usually the number one selling jersey is Tom Brady. Now, we're talking about a backup here. It's not like he's the number one running back on the Steelers. Of course, that's Le'Veon Bell. But James Conner, not your ordinary backup. If you're familiar with James Conner's story, of course, the former Pitt Panther, had a terrific game last year against Penn State at Heinz Field. Was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma during his time playing for the Panthers, only to beat cancer, return to the field, and even brought up more impressive numbers last season. And on draft night, he went back up to his hometown of Erie. He was sitting in a Buffalo Wild Wings when the Steelers drafted him in the third round. So, local kid, going to the local college, now playing for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So we'll see how that shakes out. By the way, his jersey number is 30, in case you weren't on the market on NFLShop.com looking for his jersey. But currently, the number one selling jersey in the NFL, if you're wondering about the top five, it is James Conner, Tom Brady, Dak Prescott, Marshawn Lynch, and Zeke Elliott. So far, currently, this month, your top five selling jerseys in the NFL. All right, so we will flip it to baseball. Earlier this month, we had a chance to speak with Adam Haseley, the number one draft pick for the Philadelphia Phillies. And we will have that replay, that conversation, on tomorrow's Steve Jones show here. So a guy who has seen a lot of Adam Haseley over the past month is Mitch Rupert of the Williamsport Sun-Gazette, Crosscutters beat reporter. Mitch was on with us recently.
Very pleased to bring in now Mitch Rupert from Williamsport. Mitch, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you taking the time to let me talk some Cutters baseball.
Yeah, I had Adam Haseley on the show yesterday, and about as nice an on-air conversation as you can have with anybody. What's it been like for you to deal with someone who at least walks into Williamsport with a profile?
We're always excited to get a high round draft pick, especially I think, you know, I've learned to appreciate it more because it's been a few years since we've had one. You know, the last one we had here in Williamsport was Mitch Guller, who was here for 3 years and things didn't work out for him. And now he's playing college football out at Idaho State, I think, with his brother. But we missed out on Mickey Moniak. We missed out on J.P. Crawford and Cornelius Randolph. So when we heard there was a chance Adam was going to be in Williamsport, you know, I'm obviously excited for that opportunity. Just to see the quality of baseball player he is. And the thing I noticed right away with him, and the best way I can describe it is he's just different. And it's not about the numbers on the stat sheet. It's all about how he goes about his business, you know. And I'm going to share this story in a column later this week, but the other day he walked up to the batting cage to take BP, and I was there and I looked at him like, Adam, how you doing today? He's like, good. And I looked at him and I said, are you sure? I said, your face never really changes. And he goes, you know, just trying to get ready for the game. You know, he's got that laser focus all the time. And I think you could hear it in your interview with him a little bit yesterday. You know, he's single-minded focused on whatever he's doing at that very moment. And it's tough to get him off of whatever he's focused on. And as a pure baseball fan, watching his preparation is a pure treat, because it's so much fun to watch somebody who's got that level of talent and the craftsmanship that goes into honing that talent. It's been so much fun, Steve.
Been a lot of third round picks that have played there in recent years. I mean, Luke Williams last year, Yan Hernandez, Cord Sandberg. There's one there this year as well that's a third round pick. But this is also a year, Mitch, where they've loaded up this team with the guys they drafted. There are 15 draft choices from this year on the team. What has that done for the club and at the same time for the interest in the club?
Well, I think number one, it's been a beneficial to the young kids because, as you saw, Steve, when we opened up the season in State College, it was a really young group. I mean, Jalen Ortiz in right field is only 19, or 18. Cole Stobie's only 19. Greg Pickett's 20, but he didn't play all last year. Kyle Young is 19 years old. Their left fielder's 19 years old. So what it did by bringing in these college guys, especially someone like Adam Haseley with that work ethic, is I think it's showing these guys the level of commitment it takes to be good at their sport, to be good at their craft. You know, it's not just about showing up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and taking batting practice. It's about being there at noon and taking extra work in the field, about taking soft toss in the cage, about your tee work and hitting off the tee. And I think it's brought the level up with this group. That you just have to work harder if you want to be in the upper echelon of this team. I mean, Jake Shiner's a fourth-round draft pick with a real good pedigree. Adam Haseley, of course, we've talked about. But Nick Maton is a kid who was a Division I ball player before he went to junior college last year. Colby Fitch, who just came in, played at Louisville in the College World Series and was Brendan McKay's catcher for 3 years at Louisville. These guys understand the work ethic it takes to be this good and to compete on this level, and they're transferring that over to kids who should either be freshmen in college or, in the case of Jalen Ortiz, a senior in high school.
Let's talk about the ballpark itself, Mitch, because obviously this has been one of the great transformations that's happened to the point, and obviously the Cardinals and the Pirates will be playing there on August 20th. What feedback have you received from the club, from fans, and also the people who work there?
The number one thing when this thing whole started was I said, and I had the conversation with other people, that this is great. I think this is going to be good for the Crosscutters business, you know, because Williamsport isn't a very big market. It's probably one of the smaller markets in the New York Penn League. So I thought the upgrades were going to be good for business. But the conversations I had with people were, the upgrades are nice, but you don't want to lose the charm that's associated with a 90-year-old ballpark. There was always that throwback charm to Bowman Field. It's why it's historic Bowman Field. But the day I walked in and they had all the seats in and the dugouts were done and the walling and the padding and everything was done, I said, that is absolutely irrelevant. I said, this ballpark is gorgeous. This is a true top quality minor league facility, and now they're playing on a major league quality playing service or surface on the field, and I think everybody's kind of lost that want to have that nostalgic aura of Bowman Field, and they're just happy to be in a really nice ballpark now.
Yeah, I get that sense, and in talking to Adam yesterday, that's something he brought up right away. The playing surface means a lot to him. The fact that they're playing at a Major League Baseball playing surface at this level.
Yeah, absolutely. And I talked to the infielders about it because it really affects them more than it does the outfielders, because you're dealing with ground balls. And you know, towards the end of the summer, at the old surface at Bowman Field, you would start to get some nasty hops as things kind of dried out just from the usage. And it's just kind of how things go as the season progresses. And I was talking to Nick Maton about a week ago, and he goes, every hop you get now is a true hop, and it's almost like you're playing on a turf field. You don't have to worry about it hitting a clump of dirt or the lip of the grass or anything. You're going to get the hop that you expect from it. And that's huge. I mean, that allows you to just worry about your technique and your mechanics and fielding a ground ball and not having to worry about if you're going to take one in the teeth.
I want to ask you about the August 20th game, because that's an invitation-only game. But what kind of buzz is there in the city about that, in a city that buzzes so much about the Little League World Series?
The general consensus that I get is they're disappointed that there's not going to be tickets available for the public. And I guess there is going to be a couple hundred that are available through a lottery process. But they understand how important this game is for the kids of the Little League World Series. I mean, most
exactly.
of the American teams, there's an opportunity for them within a couple hours of wherever they're from to go see a major league ball game. But it's the international teams. It's the kids that come here from Uganda, the kids that come here from Italy, Australia, from Saudi Arabia, from the oil workers and defense workers from Saudi Arabia, and these teams that are never going to get the opportunity to see a Major League Baseball game, and now they're going to get to see it here. And I've been around ball players enough to know they appreciate kids who just have a youthful exuberance for the game and are wide-eyed over the prospects of seeing big league ball players. And I think this is going to be beneficial for the big leaguers to see where these kids are and maybe understand where they used to be and how impactful they can be by taking 15 minutes before the game to go shake hands, give fist pounds, sign an autograph or two. So I think it's going to be beneficial all around.
Let's get to back to the club in general. I talked about, obviously, a couple of players. What are a couple of other prospects that you're seeing that, we're not quite a month in, but close to it, but have now made an impression where they've got that double-A look to them down the road?
Well, I'll tell you what, on a number of occasions now, manager Pat Borders, as we've talked post-game, has said, you can walk into that clubhouse right now and see 6 to 10 kids that are going to be in the big leagues. And, Pat Borders is a guy who played 15, 18 years in the big leagues. He knows what a big league ball player looks like. And it's tough to say because these kids are so young, but I always tell people you're looking for something that wouldn't look out of place on a big league field. So if you watch 18-year-old Jalen Ortiz and you see him hit a home run to the opposite field gap, you go, okay, that power doesn't look out of place on a big league field. And right now, Jalen Ortiz is trending in the direction of being a big-time prospect. I feel the same way about Rodolfo Duran, the catcher. He's only getting better as a receiver, and the pitchers rave about him as a pitch caller. I love Malvin Matos, who probably isn't getting enough love for me, because because he's hitting ninth in the order. But the other day, he goes 3-for-4 with three doubles and drives in two runs, and he's got great speed. Greg Pickett at first base, who's one of the top 3 or 4 hitters in the league right now. He's hitting about 370. He's using the opposite field, and he hits the ball 420 feet too. You can go down the list, and the story I wrote from their game Sunday when they beat Mahoning Valley was, you can pull this lineup out of the hat, and it's going to give you production. And I didn't even mention Jake Shiner, who I think has the ability to be a very good second base prospect. He's still learning that position. But at 1-9, Steve, this lineup is as good as any I've seen in 9 years of covering cross cutters.
You've also seen a little bit of State College, obviously, along the way. What's the impression you get about them?
The thing I love about State College, especially since the Cardinals have taken over, is you know you're going to get a well-played game every time out. And I talked with your partner, Joe Putnam, about this on the pregame show a couple weeks ago, that you know it's just going to be good, sound, fundamental baseball. You know, the pitchers are going to throw strikes. They're not going to walk the world. The catcher, Dennis Ortega, the one day he threw out Nick Maton stealing a base, and I think his pop time was about 180, and that just raises everybody's eyebrows. All the scouts I could see were starting to talk about that. They just have ball players on the team, you know, and there's always one or two guys that end up hitting a ton out of the ball, or somebody's hitting 330, and it's like the same thing every year with State College. You just got a good group of ball players on that team every year, and they're going to be in the mix, and it's a team you're going to have to deal with if you want to try and win the Pinckney division.
Mitch, it's always a pleasure. I always enjoy running into you, talking baseball, anything. You're a real pro's pro. Thanks so much. It's enjoyable to have you on.
Anytime, Steve. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Mitch Rupert, Williamsport Crosscutters beat writer for the Sun-Gazette and also a terrific writer when it comes to high school football and wrestling. Next hour, we've got replays with Rick Neuheisel and Ed Henry here on The Steve Jones Show and WKOK.
Four city blocks of new Ford trucks. Over 40,000 trucks sold. SMC is where you want to be. Sunbury Motors Ford has over 110 new Ford trucks. And during July, they'll include a complimentary accessory package. With the purchase of any new F-150 through July 31st, receive a tonneau cover, molded splash guards, and window deflectors at no additional charge. SMC is where you want to be because they have the largest selection of new Ford trucks in all of central Pennsylvania.
And that means the biggest savings.
Take up to $13,500 off on new F-150s. And SMC has them starting as low as $23,919. Save up to $7,000 on 2017 Ford Escapes. And they're slashed as low as $19,380. Explorers, Edges, and Expeditions have discounts up to $11,000. SMC is where you want to be in July for this mega summer spectacular sale and the complimentary F-150 accessory package. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
F-150 accessory package valued at $699. Excludes prior sales and ordered units.
Your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com. This is WKOK Sunbury.